Hello and welcome to ICTJ's podcast series. Today we are launching a major research project that ICTJ has developed in collaboration with UNICEF, exploring the connections between transitional justice and education in peace-building contexts. The report we are launching today, titled Education and Transitional Justice, Opportunities and Challenges for Peacebuilding, is the result of 2.5 years of research conducted in 9 countries around the world: Sierra Leone, Chile, Bangladesh, the former Yugoslavia, Côte d'Ivoire, Lebanon, South Africa, Northern Ireland, and Guatemala. The report is just one of many outcomes of this groundbreaking research project by ICTJ and UNICEF, and to learn more about the aims of this project and what we can expect from it in the coming weeks and months, today we are speaking with the authors of the report, Clara Ramirez-Barat and Roger Duty from ICTJ's research unit. Welcome, Clara.
Thanks, Marta.
And welcome, Roger.
Thanks, Marta.
And we also have Friedrich Affolter, the manager of UNICEF's peacebuilding program. Welcome, Friedrich.
Hi, Marta. Thanks for inviting me.
So maybe, Friedrich, you could start telling us what led ICTJ and UNICEF to partner for this project, and what were you aiming to achieve when you started this project?
Perhaps before talking about what led us to work with ICTJ, what led UNICEF to work in the area of education and peacebuilding, you may know that United Nations have a mandate to contribute to peacebuilding, but traditionally this was very much taken on by organizations who work in the area of elections, governance reform, economics, peacekeeping operations. And only recently the discussion has picked up how social service providers can contribute to peace building, because there was the thinking that tensions also arise through the unequal distribution of social services, through inequality. People feel that they are being excluded from access to hospitals, to schools, to roads, etc. And for UNICEF, it is an interesting challenge, because UNICEF provides social services such as health, child protection, education. How can we do what we do well, not just for the sake of reaching out to children and respecting their rights, but also how can we contribute to the transformation of relationships and social cohesion? Now, the theory is, at least, that a country emerging from conflict will not be able to embark in sustainable socioeconomic development if human rights violations and grievances of injustice are not being addressed. That's why we need transitional justice. So then the next question, if UNICEF wants to work in social cohesion and peace building, is how can UNICEF, through the education section, for example, or other social service sectors, contribute to transitional justice and thereby contribute to social cohesion? And that is the reason why we partnered with ICTJ, because ICTJ is a transitional justice expert organization. Our expertise is education in fragile countries, countries with protracted crisis, and it seemed like an excellent partnership to go forward with.
And Clara, what were the aims for this project from ICTJ's perspective?
Well, I have to say that in ICTJ's side, although this part of the project has been was mainly driven by the research unit at ICTJ, from the beginning this was a project that was thought in collaboration with the Children and Youth Program, which is one of the youngest programs at ICTJ as well. And for us, working in the area of how to include children in transitional justice processes, the idea of working with them in the realm of citizenship, especially thinking in change in the longer term, which is also related to one of the concerns that we had in some of our previous research regarding the impact of transitional justice and outreach related, it was a major accomplishment. All in all, we were also interested in the preventive dimension that education has, which is something that it has not been so much addressed in the transitional justice field that often. The idea of never again or non-recurrence, which is a major pillar, or I don't want to use that word, but one of the major goals of transitional justice. And if that happens if you work in the institutional level and you don't change attitudes and cultures when you try to institute these processes, it's very unlikely that the message does get where it has to get, or it's shared widely in a society that it's trying to deal with a violent past. In that, working with UNICEF for us was actually an opportunity, and ICBJ has collaborated with UNICEF in the past, also in the realm of the relationship between children and transitional justice, and it was the obvious partner, and actually it was a lot that we were able to partner with them for this project.
This major research project consists of actually several outcomes or several elements that we'll be releasing in the coming weeks or months. Roger, could you briefly explain us what those different elements are and when we can expect them?
Yes, there are a number of different elements of our presentation of the research findings. First, we have the report which we're launching today, which is entitled Education and Transitional Justice Opportunities and Challenges for Peace Building, which we're launching on the website and in print this week. And that is being accompanied by an online op-ed on the overall issue. The report will soon also be available on UNICEF's website as well. And this report generally is meant to highlight the main findings of the project, and to do two other things: provide some conceptual clarity on the issue, and also to provide practitioners and policymakers who are working in the areas of transitional justice and education with some practical guidance on these issues and in linking their work. We're also organizing a launch event for the report, and that will feature a panel discussion with speakers both from UNICEF and ICTJ, as well as other experts in education and peace building, who will be able to contribute to the discussion from a bit of a different perspective since they weren't involved in the project. The research project itself was based around 17 commissioned studies, some which were country-specific case studies, and others which were more thematic papers. And with those, we'll be publishing a selection of the papers in an edited volume, which is to be published by the Social Science Research Council, likely in the early spring of 2016. And that book will be entitled Transitional Justice in Education, Learning Peace. And we'll also be publishing three of the more thematic papers online. And finally, because if the publication of the book seems a bit far away, to go along with this between now and that point, we'll also be publishing a number of shorter online articles, pieces that are based on some of the book chapters and written by the authors of those chapters. So we'll have about 4 to 5 of those posted online between now and when the book is out. So it's a bit of an extended timeline for getting the results out, but we hope that we're able to keep up interest in the topic.
Absolutely. And now getting into the substance of your research, could you maybe explain or give us your thoughts on how can transitional justice contribute to changing education, and how can education contribute to transitional justice goals?
These two questions that you're pointing out, Marta, were precisely kind of the final aims of the research project overall, which they had a theoretical component and trying to understand really clearly what we're talking about and how we can make that connection in a way that makes sense. But as Roger was saying in regards to the report and the publication, there was also the idea of trying to come with strategical approaches and ideas of how this can really work in the field. I think that as I was saying before, normally transitional justice it's done in the realm of institutions, and it's the change of several political mechanisms, and there's not always so much attention being paid to the cultural and the public sphere and how change happens in society overall. And this is something that can be done as a kind of like a second approach to transitional justice mechanisms, or it can be also done through including education as one social institution that does have a very strong connection with socialization processes. Through our research, and probably something that we were thinking before, but that has come even more clearer as we have been collecting different papers and doing background research ourselves, is that normally, either in situations of authoritarian regimes or conflict, education is much more entangled with the conflict and the repression itself that we would credit. So there's not only the idea that the effects over education, or that education can be something that can eventually help to portray a new message of change, is important, but also the idea that in itself education is an institution or a part of the social construct that needs to be changed in itself. We've seen in contexts like Peru, for example, that because of the way in which Sendero Luminoso operated, schools, especially in rural areas, were often targets of conflict, but also schools that had been previously marginalized and deprived and had very low quality, and they became very easy centers for Sendero Luminoso to take people on board of their mandate. In the case of South Africa, it's even more telling. Education was used as one of the main means of repression because there was just enough that a certain part of the population could learn depending in which education system it accessed. In this regard, when you change the system, when a peace building or a democratization process come on board and transitional justice mechanisms are implemented in order to redress the past, the education system, if it's going to collaborate to the new project, also has to be looked from a perspective of the old traits that still are embedded in the system and that make more difficult or make very difficult to really try to impose, that's not the word, to promote an education that is democratic and respectful of human rights. And this can be done through many different mechanisms or many looking into different layers of the norms, the culture of the school, the role of teachers, curricula reform. There's many different aspects that we have been looking into how this change can be done in order to promote a more democratic educational system. But again, I insist, has been also part of the conflict before. It's not something that is detached. So that's why it's important to look at it in every specific circumstance. And I think that's what transitional justice contributes to do, is the idea of contextualizing what kind of reform the education process needs, the education systems needs to endure. From a transitional justice perspective, I think the contribution from education, besides that outreach component, it's more clearly one that links to the intergenerational transmission of memory and the idea that transitional justice are temporal processes, temporal institutions, and the change that we aim to achieve, especially looking to prevention, is a longer-term one. And education does give that intergenerational capacity to the work of transitional justice.
Thank you, Clara. Friedrich, is there something you would like to add?
Yeah, Clara mentioned most of the important points. I would like to talk a little bit about how this study can help in helping governments to use to leverage education services for transitional justice, should they choose to take this road. And it is important that partner organizations understand that social services are not just there to provide social services, but they can be used to amend grievances and to transform relationships. So what we have learned in the study is, for example, that the government of Chile would give scholarships to victims of torture or their descendants. So this is a way of redress through which an education ministry can contribute to transitional justice. Also, when a society goes through has ethnic warfare how do you actually address the grievances of a group which felt marginalized and excluded from development? Here, a government can show goodwill by negotiating with community leaders and provide education services which basically honors that culture and open the doors for the development of curriculums which is which represents and acknowledges the dignity of that culture. Of course, and then telling history from different points of views, that would be an aspect of curriculum reform, which is a very sensitive topic, but which could be taken on board. All in all, I think it's not just governments, but also donors who need to recognize that they can actually contribute to transitional justice by funding education programs which have been negotiated between governments and different partner organizations to deal with the past.
And during your research, I'm sure that you identified many challenges when trying to link transitional justice and education. Maybe, Roger, you could tell us a little bit more about what those challenges are.
Sure. I think that one of the overarching challenges in linking these different areas of work is in the implementation, in moving from good ideas to the actual implementation of change. Very often, for example, you have truth commissions that make recommendations about change in the education sector, but these go only partially implemented or ignored completely. You have reparations programs that are proposed to include providing education assistance to students, but are not followed through on. And overall, you can have it's actually rare to have education reform kind of comprehensively and to integrate it into a wider transitional justice framework. And I think this broader challenge of implementation can be explained by two different types of constraints. Those that have to do mainly with capacity and resource constraints, and those that have to do more with the interests and actions and politics of the different actors that are involved in transitional justice and education. For the first type, especially in post-conflict countries like Sierra Leone, there are often damaged and weak education systems and infrastructures that can create real obstacles for trying to implement education reform linked to transitional justice. Reform, for example, can be undermined by education systems that have little institutional capacity, or you can have reparations programs that may be able to increase access for children and youth through providing education assistance, but this may be undermined in the long run by the low quality of education that's provided through those schools. For the second type of constraints, the more political type, I think it's important for us to remember that while different actors can be important agents of change in these processes, they can also be obstacles to change as well. For example, those designing and implementing transitional justice measures, they may not appreciate the importance of examining the role of education in the past. They may not appreciate reasons for linking to education through outreach, the type of things that we're trying to highlight with this project. But you also have schools. Schools are obviously very important in any kind of change in this area and can be involved in different ways, but they can also in some ways challenge it. Teachers, for example, might resist transitional justice discourse. They might be unwilling or unable to teach the past for a variety of different reasons. School administrators may be reluctant. They're often reluctant to deal with topics to do with the recent past, which they see as too divisive for classrooms. And the communities in which schools are located and the parents of students, they may also oppose measures to do with education and transitional justice. For example, efforts to integrate schools in Bosnia and Northern Ireland because they may see it as a threat to their ethnic identity. Reparations programs may be resisted or provoke tensions because they're seen by communities to single out one group of individuals over another group. And finally, Fritz mentioned the importance of governments. And obviously, government support and approval is important, is critical, especially for the more official programs. But governments may obstruct this type of effort, again, because of because they object to the transitional justice discourse and the implications of this discord in terms of things like responsibility for the past. They may resist reparations efforts, again, because of the label reparations. They may try and conflate reparations programs providing education with the regular provision of social services, and we think it's important that those are distinguished. So I think there's a series of political and technical and capacity challenges, but although, you know, I wouldn't entirely separate the political from the technical here.
I would like to add that not so much from the research point of view, but from a program implementation point of view. As Roger mentioned, it is these topics are highly sensitive, and to get government buy-in, if you want, is very, very tricky. A, because people very often don't understand the concepts and the frameworks and why this might be meaningful and significant, but also because of the sensitivities. And I think the same thing is the case with donors. So that might be a challenge. Then curriculum, teaching different narratives of history, very difficult, very often. A curriculum is something which governments are very protective of, and they don't want it to be touched by, for example, outside agencies. Then also teachers, very often badly trained and badly paid, expecting them to deal with these issues with different histories in an appropriate way is almost too much to ask for sometimes. So how do you deal with this issue, government buy-in, donor buy-in, and history curriculum in a conflict-sensitive way? Very, very difficult. Because if you don't do it conflict-sensitively, the doors close there, and we actually want to open doors and have education for transitional justice, which is owned and carried forward. And then we should be very, very realistic about what education can accomplish and what it cannot accomplish. And very often, attitudes and social norms, which relate to histories which were a part of the history of violence, they cannot just be taught and then they change things. We have to ask ourselves how we are presenting topics, how we are discussing histories in a way that there is an impact, because just presenting something in a classroom setting may not have the consequences and the far-reaching impact which we hope to achieve.
Thank you both for your comments. After 2.5 years of research, we would like to hear what are the lessons learned that you would like to highlight.
Well, just beginning with a note of caution, which I always think it's important to have in mind. I want to say that research is kind of a like continuous endeavor, and I think this project has come to many interesting conclusions. Nonetheless, because although there's some work in the intersection between transitional justice and education in the past, it's been very conceived in certain areas of history, education, and textbooks mainly. I think this research project in this respect brings something new, because it looks at education as a social institution and also tries to link into the more cultural part of social life, a more public space. There's still many things that need to be done, and I think this is a first stone in a bigger research and practice path. Probably the practical realm is also something that we need to explore further. And I'm saying this also because we come up with a report and a book that it's compounded by a series of studies. But and in the report, we want to be strategic, we want to be practical, and we want to give advice. And in that respect, that's also why we highlight challenges. But this has to be looked as what it is. It's just a problematization of ideas and considerations more than saying, okay, this is, you know, the kind of things that should be done in all circumstances, because that just simply doesn't work. And we've seen that over and over and over again. That in all, I want to say two main contributions that I take out from the project. One more in the theoretical realm and more in the practical realm. The more theoretical is that of clarity. I think that in this research, we've been able to more clearly articulate some of the ideas that lay in the relationship between education and transitional justice, and why that is something that it's important, besides the saying, yes, those who remember their history being that through education won't repeat, or are, if you forget, you're condemned to repeat the past, no? And it's how intricated education is with conflict, and what are the possibilities it plays when it comes to change certain attitudes, or what is the role it specifically plays with the cautions that Friedrich was just signaling, which I would completely endorse, of what education can really achieve, but still with another compound of policies, what does it achieve that other policies cannot achieve specifically, and how they all work together. In this respect, I do actually have come to think that education, and precisely because of how contentious and how much power it endears for governments, the changes in education are kind of more a demonstration of how sincere the looking into the past is. And I think that Germany, it's a wonderful example of a society that after many years with many challenges has really been able to include seriously in their education work the legacy of the Nazism, which what all implies. There's so many other countries, my country is Spain, in which not only there has not been a serious transitional justice framework, but in which education has been perpetuating some of the myths of the Spanish Civil War generation after generation. In the more symbolic level, or I'm sorry, in the more pragmatic level, I think this, the lesson that we've learned, it's the idea that it's important to think all over the place and see this as a long-term endeavor with many challenges, but many opportunities, and that there's a need to play with all of them, and also to look into working at a local level, working in small projects, looking towards building future change in the longer term, that there's a possibility, that there's a path, and that there's a lot of work that transitional justice institutions, governments, donors, and civil society organizations, especially from the education community, can do to achieve this.
I would like to add to what Clara said. First of all, what I appreciate about this research is that we asked a question which I think has not really been asked before, or at least we are publishing evidence of how education can contribute to transitional justice, which is quite unique, and I'm very glad that we have now a publication which speaks to this very important topic. And secondly, the study forces us education providers to look at education from a different angle, and to actually appreciate how education can be misused, and how it can play a constructive role, and not just in the area of curriculum, but as a matter of fact, also in the way how education services are being distributed fairly or unfairly, and how they can be used to address grievances. I would say it is a way of thinking, and it is, the evidence provides examples how we can leverage education for transitional justice, and I think most educators may not have considered these possibilities.
Just to add to that, Clara mentioned the importance of opportunities, and I would just reiterate that, you know, given the different types of challenges that we've highlighted, we also found that there are specific ways in which, say, transitional justice measures, transitional justice programs with outreach projects can do specific. Undertake specific efforts to work with governments and to convince them of the importance of this. There may be different types of entry points. You know, even in difficult political situations, there may be entry points that efforts can focus on and then be leveraged for longer-term reform. For example, working with students at different levels of education. If a topic is too political or too sensitive for one level, it might be possible to work at say university, work with university students instead. Just to really emphasize, and also to highlight that, you know, even within these challenges and limited change can still be important. You can still make an important influence on societal discussions about these topics. You can still help victims try to overcome real obstacles to accessing education, even with all the challenges that we've highlighted.
Well, it seems that this research is really opening a door to a much, much bigger project. We're looking forward to the several outcomes that are going to come up in the coming weeks and months, including the event with UNICEF and the launch of the book in the beginning of 2016. Thank you so much for joining us today, Clara Ramirez Barat, Roger Duty, and Friedrich Affolter.
Thank you.
And to all our listeners, to the next time.